19 Lovett Boulevard at 2 p.m. sharp. You're listening to KPFT, Houston.
Listeners should be aware that the following program contains language and audio images which may be found disturbing and may not be suitable for your snotty-nosed little brat who probably cusses like a sailor behind your back anyway. Parental discretion is advised.
Again, it's Technology Bites.
Oh, yeah. All right. Welcome to Technology Bites. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Barrett.
I'm Dwight.
And he's...
Roothouse.
Pete is out sick, and Flicted is putting out fires with gasoline.
Now's your chance to do a Flicted impersonation if you've got one.
Oh,
chance is gone.
He just did it.
That was it.
Very subtle. See?
Uh-huh.
Thanks for that, Flicted. Yeah, well, I'm glad to be back. I've missed doing radio, sort of. It's good to be back.
We've missed you.
Well, sound like y'all did all right. Sound like the show went okay.
It's a great dynamic when Pete's in the room.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Especially the second one, it just sounded like it went without a hitch. It went really well, and... I was quite pleased as I was getting ready to go out for the day and take photos in Valencia. So, yeah, that was good. All right, well, welcome to the show, everybody. This is Technology Bites. We're here every Wednesday night in some form or fashion here in Houston and wherever else. I don't know what days we play other places. I think some of the stations play us as early as 6 in the morning on Saturdays. Some people get their...
I wonder what that sounds like.
Offensive, probably.
No geeks. Nobody wants to
wake up
to that.
Yeah.
Technology Bites with your omelet.
Breakfast bites.
Coffee.
Yes, hot cup of joe.
Bacon.
Bacon grill.
And Technology Bites.
Geeks.
I gotta go.
All right, you can find out all you need to find out about this show at geekradio.com, just like it sounds, geekradio.com. That is our website. You can get information about the show. You can take a look at photos and get announcements and ask questions and so forth. It's a great resource, so go check it out. You can also hang out with us in IRC, where it's what we like to call the show within a show. And we hang out on irc.cuckoo.com in the channel Tech Bites, hashtag Tech Bites. Ooh, I do not want to update my colloquy. And the IRC is always a lot of fun to participate in. There's a usual cast of characters that tend to hang out in there and have a discussion that may or may not have anything to do with the show. And also, a week from Friday is the Geek Gathering.
Yay. So it's not this Friday.
Not this Friday. A week from Friday.
Oh, right.
You know, Dwight was struggling with it, but want to make sure it's, as always, the first Friday of the month. And we'll be gathering at Cones. And looks like the weather's going to be good. 70s during the day, 50s at night. I like that new feature on the Facebook event page that actually puts the weather forecast on the event.
So what was it? What's the weather for? Is it
75 during the day, and it gets down in the 50s at night. Oh. So it'll be a little chilly, but not bad.
The weather has just been, you know, knock on Formica, the weather has just been really good for the Geek Gatherings.
It has. The Geek Gatherings have been a lot of fun here lately for some reason. It's just been exceptionally good.
Alcohol.
Is that it?
Alcohol.
It does grease the wheels.
It greases them. Get greased.
A little social lubrication.
I'm telling you, people, if you're listening to this radio show, and you have not been to a Geek Gathering, these are the ones to come to. They are stellar. You need to come out.
They're better than they've been in a long time. I think they're better than they've been since we were at Cava Canes.
Wait till summertime.
Yeah, then it's going to suck. But right now.
Wait a minute.
What?
It will not suck.
Okay.
It will not suck.
They'll put the ACs outside.
Hardly hot, that's all.
Yeah, I think there may be a food truck again.
You won't eat at it. What difference will it make?
Yeah, we did have a food truck after all of Dwight's
complaining.
Although he already had it.
Are you going to complain?
Serendipity food truck is still a food truck.
What I might do is I see if I can get my lovely wife to come with me, and then we will eat the food truck.
Eat the food truck.
We're hungry.
Start with the tailpipe.
Talk about greasy. Well, so anyway, come on out to the Geek Gathering. It has been a lot of fun here lately. Not that the other ones weren't fun, but they just have an extra flavor of fun. I don't know why. Just maybe it is the alcohol. But I feel like we're kind of like
back to the alcohol. It seems like.
Well, I'll tell you, hanging out with geeks, drinking a glass of wine, staring at Jim Thompson's light up tackle box. It's
pretty good.
Yeah,
it's like the '60s all over again,
except for no beaded curtains.
Yeah, I don't remember if there's any back there or not. It seems like there should be some, doesn't it? All right, so
hang on it.
What we're going to do now is, since Pete is out sick, he uploaded it. in. So we do have a Technology Bytes info shot on disk, if Groovehouse did that.
We do.
Correctly.
If it's done correctly, I hope it works. We'll just keep our fingers crossed. If not, we'll go straight into taking calls.
Well, if it doesn't work, it'll be just like every other show.
Yeah.
Where the info shot doesn't work right to get started. But that'll be fine.
Okay.
All right. So take it away, info shot.
It's the Technology Bytes info shot. Technology news and commentary by Peter Hughes. Injected directly into your skull.
In case you're interested, a lot of people use Office, and there's Blue has been announced, the update to Windows. The Office update is named Gemini. So what those mean, I have no idea. Gemini's twin. There's not a lot of answers, but according to ZDNet, Microsoft's next Office release is codenamed Gemini, and it could be making its way to your desktop by the end of this year. The site quotes a potential fall ship date, at least for the first release, which is set to include new versions of Excel, OneNote, PowerPoint, and Word. Rumor has it that the next version will be somewhat platform independent and will rely heavily on the Office 365 subscription concept, but beyond that, there's not a lot of info. T-Mobile announced their new product plans thing, the new no phone subsidies, no phone contracts approach to cellular service. They also announced that they'll be selling the iPhone 5. The one that they're going to sell is a modified version of the A1428 iPhone 5, if that means anything to you, that's currently produced for AT&T, among others. The new version, though, has been tweaked on the hardware side by Apple to support advanced wireless services bands for T-Mobile's network. According to an Apple rep that spoke to Engadget, existing phones cannot be updated to add AWS support. Quote, Apple's enabling support of the AWS bands from the factory on the new guy And sadly, Apple affirmed to us that it's not something that can be enabled via a simple software update for units already in circulation. To say another way, existing iPhone 5 owners on AT&T cannot simply apply a software patch to get the support. You have to buy a whole new phone if you want to get the full deal. On April 12th, which is the date that T-Mobile's iPhone 5 launches, Apple will be selling the new version of the A1428 iPhone. This phone will be available unlocked at full retail price through Apple and will function with both T-Mobile and AT&T, as well as on many LTE bands around the world. AT&T plans to phase out, or Apple, I'm sorry, plans to phase out the existing A1428 hardware in favor of the new version, which means future phones might also ship with AWS support included. And while the current phone that you may already have for AT&T works with T-Mobile's network, it is notably slower than the modified version. Oops. Apple's iPhone 5 with AWS included will be available at 12:01 a.m. on April 12th from 24-hour locations, and phones ordered from Apple's online stores can be unlocked after full payment through T-Mobile. There's also where you can get it through T-Mobile, and they have a plan where you make a payment plan. I think it's $100 down and $20 a month for 2 years. In other Apple rumors, as far as new stuff, you know, there's this new phone. It's a new version of the iPhone 5. iPad mini rumors, and specifically, there were two this week. And the odd part to me was the fact that they are two diametrically opposed rumors. One rumor is that the iPad mini with Retina display will come out at the end of June, around the date when the iPhone was first announced. That's rumor one. Rumor two, which is the total opposite, is that no, the iPad mini is selling so well that Apple won't release a new one until later this year, until in the fall when there's been like a full year with the iPad mini. So you get to make your own choice which one you choose to believe or want to believe is the right one. I have no idea, and until they make some closer announcement, then I don't know that anybody else does either. On the TV set front, there was a new rumor, also another Apple rumor. Supposedly their long-anticipated TV set, it's only been rumored for what, a year or something? Anyways, we'll use a 4K Ultra HD, that's a 3840 by 2160 pixel panel, according to supply chain resources reached by Digitimes. The sometimes accurate trade paper says that Apple and its main manufacturing partner, Foxconn, have been in talks for some time about the TV's production schedule. Apple, though, has reportedly been worrying about where to get parts from since Ultra HD suppliers are predicted to be working at nearly full capacity in 2013 just to meet demand from China-based TV vendors. Other suppliers that might have the capacity to make Ultra HD panels are expected to be devoting most of their efforts to producing iPhone, iPad, and iPad mini panels instead. Apple's nevertheless said to be counting on LG to be able to mass produce the Ultra HD parts by the second half of 2013. If LG succeeds, Digitimes suggests that an Apple TV could ship by the end of the year, but argues a more realistic date is early 2014. They don't have a perfect track record with Apple rumors. One unmentioned problem is that 4K TVs are still extremely expensive, costing tens of thousands of dollars, which Apple could help by entering mass production and or eating some of the cost, but would still face the issue of a lack of 4K content. You know, basically it's double the resolution of an HD television. The other thing is the format has yet to be standardized, and only a relative handful of movies have been remastered at that resolution. So, it sounds plausible, but also doesn't sound necessarily that compelling. That doesn't have the gotta have it quality that, say, the iPhone did, or even the initial iPad. And finally, on new stuff, this one's not out yet, so, you know, It's in the future somewhere, hopefully, possibly. And one of the things that's happened that some people may have already run up against is where you run out of juice for your smartphone, or particularly, you know, in the past so many months, various disasters on the East Coast and you know, blizzards and such have you know, one of the things that happens is people run out of charge on their cell phones. And so having an external portable charger, basically a battery that you charge up, and then when you need it, you take the charge out, could be useful. There's a Kickstarter for one called the Reservoir from Dark Energy, which is a slim portable charger that looks a lot like a smartphone as far as size and shape. It can recharge the average smartphone, according to them, 4 to 6 times, which could translate to an entire week's worth of power, which is ideal for emergencies. And apparently it can hold a charge for well over a year, so it would be a good part of an emergency kit, let alone for everyday use. The founder in the company's Kickstarter video, his name is Garrett Aida, said, "Like most people, I found that at completely inopportune times, my phone was dying, my camera would die on vacation, and I was nowhere near an outlet, or I had to go somewhere so I could charge it." He said, you know, while there are a lot of chargers out on the market, the founders say they wanted to design something that wasn't big and cumbersome, or tiny but with only a little charge. Apparently it can charge 2 USB devices at the same time, except it's not designed to juice up 2 tablets simultaneously, which that makes sense because tablets usually run at a higher wattage rate to charge up than a phone does. So you could do 2 phones or 2 small devices, but only 1 tablet and probably one tablet and a phone at the same time. They've already surpassed their $100,000 goal on Kickstarter. Backers who pledge at least $69 can get a reservoir from the limited stock, while anybody pledging over $10 gets a waterproof bag for it. So the Kickstarter may be, it may even be done by this time, but you can look it up if you'd like. Otherwise, we'll keep track because this one isn't, if it lives up to their descriptions, it's a pretty nice device and could lead to some more competition in the emergency power field, and also in the just kind of backup power when you're on vacation or out away from on a long flight or just away from an outlet. And that's the news.
Thanks for that, Pete.
He's not even there to defend himself. Hello, Flicted.
Hello.
So glad you're here. Everything okay?
Me too.
Cynthia wanted me to ask how your eye was.
Yeah, it got better pretty fast.
Pretty fast?
Yeah. Yeah, it's fine. But after a week, it was normal as far as I know.
Well, good.
In fact, when I went back for the follow-up, since my eye was fine, I went ahead and had him do the just a regular eye exam, and I got new glasses.
I don't think I knew that you wore glasses. Wait a minute.
Yeah. I just don't normally wear them except at work.
Because
it only bothers me when I'm
staring at a computer monitor.
Staring at a computer for very long.
Do you have them with you?
No.
I don't think I've ever seen you with glasses on.
Yeah, they're at work. Although I have a couple other pair. I have one in my car, and now I have one at my house.
Are they in the shape of 2 hands?
No, it's just the black bar.
That sensor bar. They actually made some sunglasses like that.
Yeah, I have some of those, actually. They come in handy sometimes.
Censored for your protection.
That's right.
All right, 713-526-5738 is the number to call if you want to be on the air. Groovehouse is back in his rightful position, screening phone calls.
Yay.
And manning the phone system. Flicted, two-eyed Flicted.
So I have a decision I'm trying to make here.
Oh, yeah. Let's have that conversation.
See what I am working on the possibility of dropping my UVerse cable and going all streaming, cutting the cord.
I've done that.
You have done it. And Jay, when I was talking to Jay before the show about it, he immediately knew what my biggest dilemma was, is CBS.
CBS doesn't stream on Hulu or, yeah. And they're not, and, you know, interestingly enough, they're not even available on Comcast On Demand.
No, they're not on there or on UVerse On Demand.
Any of the places where you would expect.
Like, what show are you after?
Well, both my wife and I enjoy, kind of one of our guilty pleasure shows is CSI. Las Vegas, we don't tolerate New York or Miami. And
he is like Ted Danza. Is that Ted? No, Ted.
No, I like the earlier version, but this it's still okay. So,
yeah. Well, I mean, like Good Wife, no Mentalist.
No, we don't watch those. Yeah, my wife wants to get into The Good Wife, but we are so far down the road from
that you
it.
Could be watching it on Netflix or whatever. Right.
Except the first season is not available anywhere, which is interesting. So anyway, CBS is a problem, but we spend a lot of money on cable. Running the numbers, if you buy the television shows, a season of the television shows, get a season pass on iTunes or Amazon, for about the 5 to 8 shows that we watch any given year, it's still a lot less money than if we pay UVerse. You know, we're paying them about $130 a month. And so it's very, I'm really tempted to do it, and I'm probably going to like work it out in my blog over a few posts. And I'm going to give Hulu a test. We're not a subscriber to Hulu at the moment, but they'll give you a week free, and so we're going to try that and see how that feels.
The downside to everything is, and you talk about blogs, is you're going to have to start avoiding blogs that talk about shows because you're not going to see them until usually the morning after. That's the downside.
I'm
a DVR kind of guy anyway, so usually I just DVR it. I don't watch in real time as it is.
See, maybe I watch like The Walking Dead, and it doesn't fail. Like someone put something out there Sunday night.
I immediately saw that spoiler. Yeah. I haven't watched this whole season.
I haven't seen it. I don't know.
I have seen it.
Speaking of Walking Dead, though, I have one question.
Uh-huh.
Who is mowing the lawn of the prison during the zombie apocalypse?
It sure is neatly cut.
Maybe it's zombie bunnies eating them.
Did they skip last week?
They aired last week.
All right.
It did air. So The Walking Dead is actually about the only thing I usually try to watch in real time just because I love it so. I want to see it, but I can wait a day. And I can actually save quite a bit. I don't do a lot of sports, you know, but you can get real time. You know, we have Rabbit Ears
that
you're
watching on the TV. Right. I wonder if you run the numbers, if you could justify a digital recorder for broadcast television to get some of the shows to...
What I would like, a device I really want, and maybe Apple will make this for me someday, is a DVR that does AirPlay. So I can do AirPlay mirroring from my notebook computer, my iMac, or my MacBook Pro over to the television set. Now, I could get Apple TV and
Can't you do that with like a cable, DVR. Like where when you were playing the games on your Mac? When you're playing,
that was one of the new MacBook Pros that has an HDMI connection. Old one does not.
So, what was the issue? What's the issue with AirPlay over Apple TV?
I wanted that way I could do CBS because I could watch it on my MacBook Pro because you watch CBS shows on their website, and then I could mirror that to my HD.
I mean, if you can do that,
right?
Pardon?
I thought you could AirPlay.
But I don't have Apple TV yet. And I also want a DVR so I could DVR local shows.
Yeah, but Apple TV's $99. It's not that bad.
Right, and that's something.
What else do you get with Apple TV besides the ability to AirPlay?
You can do Netflix through it.
I can do Netflix through two other devices.
Well, no, you're not going to get... Okay, the only special stuff you're going to get is if you have a lot of music in iTunes, you can AirPlay music... But you can also AirPlay videos and your screens if it's a newer system.
But there's no additional content.
You get streaming radio stations that you can get on other stuff. You get Netflix.
How much is a digital recorder these days?
Well, if you want one that handles HD, they're fairly pricey. And TiVo charges per month for their guide service and for you have to have their service in order to use it, which I'm trying to get away from. I'm trying to get away from as many.
No, but isn't there like a standalone device that you don't have
to... You can buy like a no-name, you know, there's like off-brand DVRs that'll do that. I'm just at the beginning of the process of researching this. But that's a, you know, that's a fairly sizable hardware.
So I was just thinking, go ahead.
I was saying, so you use iOS app for CBS?
I could use the yes, there is a CBS iOS.
As Katie Five mentioned, I wouldn't have known that because I honestly don't really watch any TV, even though I have satellite. If it actually stopped working, I probably wouldn't know for 2 weeks.
If the CBS app lets me watch, like, you know, the next day CSI, then I can. I have an HDMI adapter for my iPad, so I could just do that. Actually, so
Really? Yeah. You know, there's an HDMI adapter you can do for the iPad. Yes. That'll send it to your TV?
Yes.
And the iPhone.
Yes.
Now, there is a... Now, it'll only do downloaded stuff, I think, but there's a media server for the MacBook called Plex, which will stream stuff from your MacBook or your Mac computer, any Mac computer, to...
An HDMI?
No, to an HDLNA-enabled TV. So
which is my Samsung is.
So the device will show up, and the same thing with Windows Media Player, right. But I don't think it will let you do web content or screen replication. But it will take any media file that's on your computer, whether it's video or audio or whatever, and allow you to access it on your TV.
A lot of the Samsungs, you can also just put that video...
On a thumb drive
and plug it straight into the TV.
Yeah, I could do that.
Man, if you could download it, I guess if you could download it from iTunes, then you could certainly play it on your TV, easy peasy.
But CBS doesn't.
Right.
Damn you, CBS!
Because I was thinking about actually, and I don't want to go this route, but I was so interested in seeing the new season of Game of Thrones that I was thinking about, I wonder if I should sign up for some HBO, but. You got some shows on Showtime you like, right?
Yes, and Showtime does show up on
iTunes and Amazon.
But
HBO doesn't.
HBO does not do that, right?
So there's these weird little gaps,
right?
Depending on how you watch TV, that make the streaming just kind of hiccup for you,
right?
But then if you look at however many thousands of dollars a year you can save,
I'm almost finished with Battlestar Galactica.
The original version.
No, I still haven't watched that one. Yeah. I saw some of it in real time, but I don't remember it.
Well, I just was watching some like vintage Doctor Who from the 50s or 60s or whatever it was.
My other issue is what happens when there are things that I like to watch that my wife doesn't care for. And so... then do we say, okay, yeah, I get to spend the money just for me to watch it. Like Sons of Anarchy. She doesn't like Sons of Anarchy.
Too bad.
Well, here's a suggestion on the fly, is you should take and write down how much money you spend on your TV now. This is how much money you're spending. And then use that as a budget to buy your other TV. So add up how much your monthly subscription to Netflix is, your monthly subscription to Hulu, Amazon, and then give yourself a budget for buying certain shows.
Yeah. Yep.
And each of you get a budget. Maybe you could take part of that and say, here's your wife's budget, here's mine. And so I'm going to buy Sons of Anarchy and whatever else. And then just hope that she likes all the other shows that you like, and then she'll buy those for you.
That could become like a new prison currency in the household. Like you could trade based on, hours of recorded shows.
Or cigarettes.
Kind of like your own personal Bitcoin system.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Did you see that article about the $750,000 pizza?
No.
There was an article, and I forget which page it had it, but this guy whoever it was that demonstrated that Bitcoin could actually be used to buy real things. He spent 10,000 Bitcoin and got somebody to buy him a pizza. And now at that point, the Bitcoin was not worth a lot of money. But now, one Bitcoin's worth
kind of pop back up in
75
value.
Bucks.
Mm-hmm.
So 10,000 Bitcoins was $750,000, or $750,000 pizza. Interesting. I need to learn more about Bitcoin. Apparently, it's too late.
Last very thing on Dwight's thing. I'm going to convert my Raspberry Pi, which is like a $35 computer,
right,
into XBMC, which is the Xbox Media Center, which used to run on Xboxes, which has been stripped down to become like a set-top box, which does, HD, PVR, and all kinds of stuff like that.
And also install it on... I had it installed on my first-generation Apple TV.
You got rid of the Apple firmware?
And Boxy, yeah.
How'd you like it? Knowing that that was even a few years ago, probably.
Yeah, it was a few years ago, and I thought, well, this would be really cool. Mostly was to play, but I also thought it would be kind of cool, because I'm like, oh, I can watch all these shows that I don't normally watch, because I don't watch them in real time. And then I quickly discovered that I couldn't really find any shows that I wanted to watch on Hulu, hardly. Everything was like little, 2-minute segments of, three episodes.
All the clips, yeah.
Yeah, and it was pretty worthless to me. So when Apple TV came out with... a major software revision, I just went ahead and wiped it and loaded the new version of Apple TV. So I never went back to it.
I have a couple of other options. I have a boxy box, which is will do AirPlay audio but not video. And I have an Xbox. And the problem with the Xbox is if I do that, that's one more subscription thing because you have to have the live Xbox Live subscription.
So I think somebody said the Netflix interface on Xbox isn't that great either.
Yeah, and I have Netflix built into the TV. I have a lot of it. All the apps I need are in the TV.
Yeah, I just discovered that too. I've got a new Samsung TV, and it comes with everything. I was
and
really
you can download more.
You know?
If like my LG, I can download more apps.
Right.
For see, the TV. My TV, I have a Samsung also, but it's 4 or 5 years old, and they just started getting into putting apps on the TVs maybe like the year before. And so mine is like Yahoo Widgets or something. And
yeah, that was their first.
I have a like horribly slow processor in my, so it's basically worthless. I can't use them. It takes 15 seconds to load the widgets bar, and then it takes a couple seconds to change to each widget, and then each widget takes 5 to 10 seconds to load. Right. Like, there's just no way.
And the Yahoo widgets are still present on the Samsung TVs, and that's where the Amazon player is, which is weird. It's like a widget within the Yahoo widget.
Yeah, on the LG TV, like Netflix and Hulu, they work pretty well. But there's some other stuff that you go, I wouldn't want to use this built into the TV. But now that makes me wonder if there is an Amazon on the LG.
If there's a Yahoo widget, it's in there. If you have a Yahoo widget, it's built in there.
Hmm. We had a Ray Kurzweil Singularity call that dropped off.
Yeah.
I guess the Singularity got him. That looked interesting.
All right, 713-526-5738. You can talk about whatever you like. We're going to, in the spaces between calls, maybe talk more about streaming television as an alternative to paying for Comcast or UVerse. All right, Groovehouse?
Yes.
Who do we have up first?
All right, up first on the show, we are going to speak with Jelani.
Jelani, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Hey, you guys, how's it going?
Good.
Well, first of all, I want to say I always listen to you guys. I think you guys are really awesome. You know, I learned a lot from you guys. I think it's a great show.
Thanks.
Okay, I had a question. Is there a way that you can export a group out of your Outlook that you created into your Microsoft Office Communicator without adding each contact and communicator individually?
You're talking about it on the Mac, right?
No. On the PC.
On the PC. Microsoft Office Communicator and Microsoft Office Outlook.
Right.
So what you want to, you have contacts in Outlook, but you want them to be accessible via communicator. Now, that situation works great if you're using an Exchange environment because the contacts are just put on the Exchange server, and both Outlook and the communicator client will get that information from the Exchange server. But I've never tried to get the information exported out of Outlook and import it into communicator. Have you done any online research on that at all?
I went to Google and it showed me how to do like the contacts, like how to add contacts into communicator. But
I'm talking about a real basic internet search, like export Outlook contacts communicator.
Yeah, it would probably be an export and an import.
Mm-hmm. Okay,
but
export.
It might be a special kind of export and import. I've never tried to do that.
Yeah.
Okay.
How to export communicator contacts? How to import Microsoft Office communicator contacts? That's the way that I would approach it. I don't have the answer for you right off the top of my head. I don't know that it can be done. It's not something that's come up for me. I don't use communicator like with more than just a handful of people. So it's not a big deal for me to add those contacts manually. But if I was going to try to tackle this situation, I would start constructing some internet searches or Google searches, however you want to call it, export Outlook contacts communicator, and just browse through whatever you find and see I see lots of articles that talk about how to export contacts out of Communicator, but I'm not seeing right at the top of my head anything for going the other way. Let's see. How can I set Office Communicator to use my Outlook settings? I think you'll find it if you hunt for it. I could get on the internet and search for you and kind of read half of a web page to you, but that doesn't make for very good radio. So
I got you. No, she asked because she had a group that she created in Outlook, and she asked me, is there a way that I can just add this group from Outlook into Communicator and just send like an instant message to everybody?
I don't know if you could actually get the group itself. You'd have to get the individual contacts, but in Communicator, I know that you can open up a chat to multiple people at the same time.
And you can group people into groups.
So you'd have to get all the contacts out of Outlook into Communicator, and then you could build the groups inside of Communicator and do it that way.
Okay.
If that's possible. I don't know that that's necessarily possible.
Maybe somebody, you can find somebody who wrote like a XML editor or something that when you export all your contacts, it automatically like run it through this and it reformats them into an import file for Communicator.
Yeah, I'm seeing a couple of tools out there, and that's what both files are XML, and that's what they do, it looks like. So you're going to have to find a script. It doesn't look like it's really built into either product.
Oh, a script. Okay.
Yeah, but just like Flicted said, just search that and then put in script, and you'll find a tool that'll do it for you.
Okay. All right. Like, love you guys' show. I appreciate you guys. Thank you so much.
All right. Thanks for your call. Good luck.
Okay. All right. Bye-bye.
Or the script will install a Trojan and take all your bank account money.
In Spain.
Yeah, I don't know how that happened. It just bugs me. So there are not scanners that can do a near field to a magnetic strip?
No, not magnetic.
I'm not aware of any.
No.
Okay.
I mean, you'd have to get within like a quarter inch or something, like super close to be able to read that. Yeah.
And it, because it's not magnetic strips, also like an RFID or something, they aren't just broadcasting their information in like a serial format. I mean,
right.
It's written along the length of it. So you
have to run
something that would run the length of it. I don't.
You make sense to me now. So, yeah.
I was kind of curious when I saw the wireless scanning stuff. Like, what were you carrying? If you had, like, some kind of brand new RFID only.
Well, I mean, I don't know. I don't know. I don't know.
Credit cards that have RFID.
I don't know for positive that the credit card is not RFID enabled. But because of the... here's the way I picture that it went down, is that whoever it was got a hold of my credit card, and then there's some, either they just used it for the purposes of whatever they used it for, which was all this weird online chatting stuff.
Were you ever, just so people at home know, I guess, you left the country, came back, had some credit card fraud, looked like it originated elsewhere, but it was like online kind of stuff.
It was all online stuff.
Were you ever parted from your credit card? Like, did you hand it off to a waiter? Or
did
you ever
in Europe, I only used it in three places. I used it at the front desk of the hotel, where I saw the card go in the reader and come out. And at one restaurant where they bring the reader to the table, mm-hmm. and they put the card in and they pull it out. And it actually, you know, they type in the code and it prints out a little receipt and you sign it.
Did you make any online purchases?
No.
I mean, there are. And I've seen some scams like this. You can even see some of this gear online for purchase. But, you know, a lot of waiters can carry little scanners underneath their apron. Or sometimes, you know, they'll have like a little overlay where it looks like they're just swiping it, but they're getting the data
in
twice.
Europe,
I mean,
at least in Spain, they have this box where they come out and it's got a keypad on it and they put the card in it. So certainly there could have been a secondary reader. I mean, I've seen that there's secondary readers that can go inside of a primary mm-hmm. reader. Mm-hmm. So it's possible that the waitress at the one restaurant that I used the credit card at got it.
Did you use it in any U.S. airports?
No.
Any shady ATM locations?
Nope. I didn't use it for any ATM.
Online purchases?
I've... Before I left, maybe, but you know, I've used it for a few different things.
I suspect the hotel.
Yeah, it was just weird because I almost envisioned that whoever got it, it went into like there's some underground IRC channel where they trade the currency.
Right, they're carding channels, yeah, where right. you can buy you know, X amount of cards that have about this much on them for this amount of days. Yeah.
So I'm going to use these cards for a couple of days, and then they're going to get canceled. I'll move on to the next thing. But it was weird because the bulk of the charges were for some kind of online chat which I would assume was adult-oriented. And then the others were to buy some antivirus software, like some of those scam cleanup things.
Could be money laundering fronts, too, like the 976 numbers or what have you. I would suspect, I think out of all the possible culprits, I think the hotel makes the most sense because they know that you're coming with a good credit card. You're probably from out of town. You're probably not going to be checking your bank statements for the next couple of weeks. That's a pretty golden opportunity for a scam.
But the hotel that it's possible. I want to believe that it was. I mean, the hotel that we stayed at in Madrid was very nice, and all the people we dealt with were very nice.
Well, like I said in my
if they don't handle the data properly, if they print out a receipt or they have it written down somewhere. They could have got it.
Numerous hands can be on it. Mm-hmm. Any cleaning staff that never even saw who you were, if they throw something in the trash, then it suddenly is even more.
Well, it
people
felt very
that could
European.
Go through it.
I felt like I was being defrauded European style. I don't know.
My guess would be probably that it's probably somebody that normally does this, and they probably just sell them for like $5 per number that they get to somebody else, and then they just sell them in. There's sites you can go to and buy like blocks of 10, 100, 500, 1,000, 5,000 valid credit card numbers, and then you just use it until it runs, gets turned off.
No, tell us more, Flicked.
But on the plus side, the credit card company is very good about reversing the charges and taking care of it. So way to go, Capital One. All right, Gravehouse?
Yes.
Who do we have up next?
All right, up next on the show, we are going to speak with Billy.
Billy, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Hey, Billy. I'm sorry. My name is Billy, man, and I've been listening to you guys. I just want to know one thing. I've been over to where you are and a couple of times, and I wonder how many guys are in that little room.
There's three in one room and two in the other.
Oh, I see. Okay. I was wondering how they all going to fit in there, man. Okay. My question is, I was trying to tell the gentleman who answered the phone that I'm not computer illiterate, because I did study programming, many years ago with the IBM 360. Now that might tell you how old I am. But I'm planning on buying, I'm on the road, I'm a musician, and I'm on the road a lot, and I need a laptop now, and I need some advice. You know, I've been thinking somebody gave me one of the computers that fit inside my house, but I'd probably put it in my car and try to run it on DC.
That wouldn't be a good plan.
Yeah, I know. Anyway, I'm thinking about buying a laptop to take with me on the road, and I have been on the internet before, but it's not a thing, man, but I need it now, and I need some help from you guys. And by the way, this is the first time I've caught the show, but I really enjoy hearing you guys just kind of banter around. It's really cool, man.
Well, appreciate that. Well, what do you need? What do you think you need to do with this laptop? What is the end goal?
The end goal is to, and I need to ask you this. If I have a laptop, do I have all the same things? Like, can I get on, do I have to get a Facebook account, right?
Well, you don't have to get a Facebook account, but you can, with any computing device, whether it's a laptop or a desktop or a tablet or an iPhone, you can access Facebook with it.
So they all have the same capabilities then, right?
Well, yes and no. I mean, that's why I'm asking you specifically, what do you want to do? Because if your main, if your main goal is to browse the web and send and receive email, and you want to have a device with you on the road, then perhaps a tablet device like an iPad or something like that might be suitable for that purpose.
Uh-huh.
But if you need to run applications, you know, if you're going to do, I don't know, maybe recording or try to do, you know, music editing or stuff like that, then you're going to want a laptop.
Okay, I'm more comfortable with the laptop.
Okay, so a laptop, and right now you don't have anything, right?
I have nothing. That's correct.
Nothing. Okay, so my recommendation to you would be to set a budget. Say, I can afford to spend this much money, whatever that amount is.
And I see, okay.
And then go and get a laptop that falls into that budget. Now, with keeping in mind that you don't have anything right now and you really don't know exactly what you're going to do, you could probably go and buy a very low-end laptop, which is still going to be very, very capable.
I see, okay.
To give you an opportunity, because you don't want to go out and spend, say, $2,000 on a top-of-the-line laptop and then find out that you don't take to it. You know, you're not going to use it.
Yeah, and it's not necessarily, I didn't need that much.
Right. But if you're talking about getting something to kind of get your feet wet and get familiar with it, then, you know, something in the range, you know, of like $300 to $600 will get you a very capable laptop that'll have Windows installed on it. It'll give you the ability to access Wi-Fi hotspots as well as, you know, connect to a home network and suit you just fine. And in terms of which one to get and which brand, that's something you're going to have to kind of go out and do a little digging around and see. You know, I would go to a store that sells them, like a box store, like Best Buy or whatever. And
Fry's
or Micro Center, whatever. One of the big box stores where you could go and like put your hands on it. You can pick it up and see how heavy it is.
Yeah.
You can put your hands on the keyboard and see how comfortable it is.
Uh-huh. Now, one thing that to keep in mind is if you're buying a Windows machine right now, you're going to get Windows 8.
Okay, is that good?
It depends. Windows 8 is a completely different interface from if the last thing you saw was like Windows 95.
The last thing he saw was an IBM 360.
Oh.
Well, no, I did see Windows 7.
Okay.
I don't think that's a concern.
All right. Except.
Okay.
Windows 8 really, really works best if you can touch the screen.
It works best?
If
okay.
You can, right. It has a touch-based interface on one part of it.
Oh, cool. I see.
So.
Yeah,
you know,
great,
Jay's
man.
Recommendation to go between $300 and $600. Yeah. I would raise that a little bit to maybe about $800 if that fits in your budget.
Yeah, $800 would be all right. Yeah.
And make sure that if it's a laptop and it's a Windows 8 machine, I'd recommend
that it's
a touch enabled on the screen.
Ah, great. That's what I need. Something that I won't have to, you know.
You will still use a keyboard, but being able to move around in Windows 8 is much, much easier if you touch it.
Are you going to take this into the venues with you, or is this going to stay in the car, stay in the room around the road?
Well, it's basically, it's going to be in the car most of the time. I hope to have a bus pretty soon, okay? So I'm trying to, I'm a wannabe, okay? I sing pretty well. As a matter of fact, you guys have one of my CDs over there, maybe three or four of them. But I've been in music all my life, but now I'm singing about it. and I need to, you know, I've been invited to Austin. I've been invited to San Antonio and places like that. And I need to go and do something about my business in the music business, all right? But I want to be able to communicate, like, for instance, with some of the musicians in Austin. And, you know...
anything you get is going to have the ability to browse the web, send and receive email as long as you have access to an internet connection. So you're going to be fine there. We're going to go ahead and we need to wrap this up and got a few other callers before the But Dwight mentions that the Windows 8 operating system, which is the current operating system on new computers today, does benefit from having the touch interface. So if you're going to learn how to use Windows 8, you might benefit from having a touch interface, so spending the extra money to get one that's touch-enabled.
Yeah, I believe you're right. I'm going to take this good advice that you've given me, man, and I appreciate the information. And I hope you guys have a nice evening.
All right.
And keep smiling, man. You guys are really great. I love you. Okay.
All right. Thanks for your call tonight.
Okay, babe. Bye-bye. Bye.
Mon ami. 713-526-5738 is the number to call. We've got a full bank of calls right now, which is awesome. And we're going to get to every one of them as quick as we can. We've got about 8 minutes before the top of the hour break that we have to take, but let's see if we can get another call on the air. Groovehouse?
Yes.
Who's up next?
Up next, we're going to speak with Khalil.
Khalil, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Hey, guys. Hey, guys. I got a kind of a complicated little scenario for you. I'm a field technician in a telecom field, and I went to a client's house, and I went to add some network-capable devices. And the existing configuration was a modem, a switch, and a router. So I said, well, let me try to reconfigure it in a more efficient way to go modem, router, and then switch.
Okay.
So I did that. And after installing everything, one of my network devices, which is an alarm panel, that device could not communicate at all. I would look in the client list of the router, and I wouldn't see the MAC address. I wouldn't see anything. So I said, okay, well, let me take that device and go directly to the modem. And immediately that device starts to communicate with no problem.
What kind of internet access? Is it a cable or is it
It's cable.
It's cable, like through Comcast?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. I don't know if this comes into play or not, but when you're dealing with Comcast, the first MAC address that the modem sees is who it is the device that it provides internet access to. So if that thing you were talking about that you plugged straight into the modem was working when it was plugged into the modem but wouldn't work when it was plugged into the other things, it's possible that you need, I'm assuming maybe you rebooted the modem.
Yes.
Because every time you bring up your what you want to have happen is you want to turn everything off, you want to turn on the modem, and you want the router to be the thing, the first thing that it sees, so it assigns the internet access to the router, and then everything else connects to the router to get internet access from that. If I was going to break this down to try to troubleshoot, I'm assuming the router has 4 Ethernet ports?
Yes.
So how many devices do you have?
Coming out of that router, 4, so it's maxed out.
So it's maxed out. So if you're trying to use the switch to add additional beyond the 4?
Well, what I did, that switch, it wasn't needed, so I removed it totally, and I just went modem, router, and okay. That device could not communicate at all. I removed the router, went modem, device was fine.
All the other devices that are connected to the router can access the internet?
Yes, fine, with no problem. But this is what I did. I removed that router, and I had a test router. I put that router on, and the device was able to communicate through the router fine.
And then buy a new router for this customer, or get this customer to buy a new router. What brand is the router that they're using?
It was like a regular, like Cisco 1200 or something like that.
Well, the N1200? Like that's the low. That's the low end.
That's the low end Cisco.
I don't see why it wouldn't work.
Did you try flipping ports?
Did you try any of the other ports?
Just to see if it worked on one port.
I tried flipping ports, and then what I had to do, I had to put it back to the original configuration, which was modem, switch, and the device was hooked up to the switch, and the other port of the switch went right to the router, and it worked.
That doesn't make sense to me that would work, because as far as I know, the cable modem will only give one device, access to the external interface, so I don't see how that would work.
Well, the router's grabbing that one, isn't it?
Well, the router, but if the router grabs it,
then the other device shouldn't work.
Then anything connected to the switch to the modem shouldn't. So it's passing. So you've got the modem connected to the switch. It's passing through to the router. The router's getting what it needs. But anything else on that switch should not work unless it's coming through the router and back through the switch.
Unless it's some kind of smart switch that has that actually.
And it's not. It's like a regular, $10 switch. Nothing fancy at all.
Okay, like an 8-port or switch?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, that doesn't make sense to me necessarily.
The only thing I can think of is that there's something in that router that isn't allowing, the ports through that device normally uses or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, there could be a firewall setting on there that's blocking. I know. Actually, I bet you I know why. Because you probably, for the security switch, are going to need some kind of port forwarding enabled on the router for that thing to work. But you say you worked on the other router, so that doesn't make sense. I say you get the client to invest in a new router that matches what you already have and move on. I can't think of why it's not working.
That's what I was thinking. And one more thing, one suggestion about your discussion about DVRs and NVRs. There's a product out there called Silicon Dust. I think it's called HD Pro. And you can record broadcast signal and cable signal. And it has a Ethernet port. And you can destinate your recordings directly to a network folder. So wow. It has a cable jack on it.
It's DLNA certified, too, I'm seeing.
Yeah.
Oh,
it's been out for like maybe 10 years, so I've never tried it, but it's they've been improving their product every year.
Looks interesting. I'll do some research. I appreciate the information.
All right, thanks a lot.
All right, thanks.
By the way, a little point of data that...
Data point.
That Linksys, which is what Cisco was selling its commercial routers and that, they had bought them. They have since sold them to Belkin.
Really?
And Belkin... as of like last week, now owns Linksys.
Oh, I used to like Linksys.
Well, we'll see what happens.
There's still any Cisco anything routers wise?
There are Cisco commercial routers,
but not for.
Right,
they've gotten out of that prosumer consumer kind of market.
Right.
Okay.
And they sold it to Belkin. So if you go to Linksys.com now, it's still the same lineup, and all the support information is there, but it's now Belkin branded.
I'm looking at this silicon dust stuff. It might be interesting. You might want to look into it, Dwight.
Silicon dust.
SiliconDust.com.
Got a little silicon dust on there.
Nice. Is that our little, like, alert? All right.
I'm just trying stuff.
Okay, but we actually have 3 minutes, right?
Mm-mm. No, we have until 58.
Okay.
A minute one.
1 minute.
All right. So we have this nice little bed music to let us know that we're getting ready to go to our end of the hour break. It seems amorphous.
Should I be meditating?
We should be.
Breathe in, breathe out. Breathe in, breathe out. Listen to the dulcet tones of Technology Bites. Feel your computer healing itself.
Be one with your computer.
All right. Well, we got to take a short break. So we are going to go away for a little while, and then we'll be right back.
We're going to our happy place.
We're going to our happy place here in just a matter of seconds. So you are listening to Technology Bites. Yeah, I like that. You're listening to Technology Bites. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Garrett.
I'm Dwight.
Oh, sorry. You weren't here earlier.
I'm afflicted.
And he's...
I'm Groovehouse.
We'll be right back after these messages.
Are you interested in volunteering your time to create a better community, a better tomorrow? Are you a student that needs the perfect internship before you graduate? Do you love community radio so much that you want to donate even more than money, your time? Then volunteer with us at KPFT Pacifica Radio 90.1 FM. On Saturday, March 30th at 2 p.m., we are having our first volunteer information session of 2013. Volunteer opportunities include events, the KPFT News Department, voiceover work, radio show production, recycling, and much more. So join us on March 30th, 2013 at the Little House That Could, the KPFT Studios. The address is 419 Lovett Boulevard at 2 p.m. sharp. You're listening to KPFT, Houston.
Hey all you blues and crawfish lovers, make plans now to attend the first annual Pearland Crawfish Festival the weekend of April 5th through 7th at Shadow Creek Ranch on 288 South between FM 2234 and Broadway. There'll be 3 days of Cajun food, 2 stages of blues and zydeco, and much, much more. The Houston Blues Society stage will showcase Houston bands who battled it out to represent us at the 2013 International Blues Challenge, including our finalists, the Brad Absher Band and John Egan. Proceeds benefit the Houston Blues Society and the Friends of Fairland Westside Library while you enjoy crawfish, blues, Zydeco, and lots of other family-friendly entertainment. Discounted three-day passes or single-day tickets are available in advance through HoustonBluesSociety.org, or you can pay at the gate. More information is available at FairlandCrawfishFestival.com. You're listening to KPFT Houston.
Yeah, baby. If you can name that tune, you win the right to subscribe to KPFT and Technology Bites during our next upcoming fun drive.
It only cost you $40.
Well, actually, shouldn't you just come in at the top there with the other thing?
Yeah, is there actually one?
There is one, yeah.
It's a short one.
You know, I don't know if you... Did you listen to the whole show enough to know actually what was going on?
No.
Like, without you here to crack the whip, no Barrett time. The whole time you were gone.
I was busy, too. Wow, just threw me under the bus. I figured if he didn't listen, we just weren't going to say anything.
I tuned out after you accused me of saying, thanks for that beat, over and over in my sleep. I wasn't feeling well either, so I was like, oh, man, I'm trying to get up and go do some sightseeing. But I went ahead and dialed up the podcast. Love you guys, man, but sometimes I just don't want to come back.
All right, and now it's time for... Hey, Barrett, what's happening?
I don't know.
Well, room around town...
We interrupt this skit to bring you...
Yeah. That means it's time for...
Barrett time!
Yeah. Anyway. Take it away, Barrett.
Alright, this week at work has been another ugly one, and under normal circumstances I would not have had time to craft a Barrett time. However, Jay's back, and Flicted, I know, can no longer be trusted. Also, my life has taken a turn for the better. I received my Nexus 4 wireless charging station in the mail a couple days ago, and was able to save enough time by not having to fiddle with cords to put the following together. While the idea of wireless power isn't new, André-Marie Ampère first showed the electrical current produces a magnetic field in 1926. Nicholas Callan invented the electrical transformer, or induction coil, in 1836, the same year Houston was founded, and Nikola Tesla played around with wireless power transmission in the early 1900s. We're certainly not using it every day, though, in everyday life, or are we? Any guesses as to the most popular device in American homes that's been using wireless charging for 10 or 20 years now?
Wireless charging?
Wireless charging.
In the home.
In the home.
Toothbrushes.
Whoa! Yes, rechargeable electric toothbrushes. Since they often get wet, it just isn't practical to have exposed contacts which could short out or corrode, so many models have made the move to inductive or wireless charging. In fact, Oral-B toothbrushes have used inductive charging since the early 1990s. A number of electrical vehicles also use inductive charging, the EV1, S10, and RAV4 EV vehicles, for example. Wireless or inductive charging uses an alternating electromagnetic field that is generated within a base station to transmit power to a second induction coil that resides in a mobile device. Second coil converts the electromagnetic field back into an electrical current, which can then be used to charge a device.
What's the loss on that? You know?
It's not very efficient. My charging delta when I'm on the wireless charger is about 75% slower than it is just normally on the wall. It's still not that bad, though.
But for overnight, it's fine.
Oh, yeah, it'll still charge in 4 hours. Charging time dead to whatever is about 4 hours. So while the Palm Pre introduced the technology to the consumer market in 2009, it took nearly 4 years for the other mobile phone manufacturers to catch up. The Nokia Lumina 920 was the next model to arrive on the scene and now shares space with the handsets such as the HTC Droid DNA, HTC Windows Phone 8X, LG Spectrum 2, and now Google's flagship Android phone, the Nexus 4. So pretty much every platform but iPhone. Of course, it'll probably take Apple's adoption of the technology to truly lend it legitimacy. And while wireless charging is definitely cool, it does have its drawbacks. Like Flicted said, it's not as efficient as a direct electrical connection, meaning it requires more power, takes longer to charge, and generates more heat than traditional charging methods. It's also more expensive, so mobile handset makers would have to include it in every device, even though the majority of current consumers wouldn't take advantage of it. There's also the price jump of more than $50 to go from a cheap USB cable to an inductive charging, to an inductive charging base station. So, is it a fad, or is it a necessity, a new necessity? We'll have to wait and see, because I've already depleted my wired to wireless time savings for the next 2 months. It doesn't really save all that much time, actually, but it does look cool. That's it for your inductive instruction. That's that for Barrett time.
All right.
Ooh, see, it even has magnets to hold it on the base station, which is kind of cool.
Put it up next to your monitor. Does it discolor?
Yeah, that's
no,
right.
Yes. I would assume not.
Does it come with a built-in degausser?
I would assume not, because this is LED backlit, so I would assume it wouldn't affect it.
Probably wouldn't.
Shouldn't, because
try
yeah, there's no...
Try it
on whites.
Oh! Did I read something somewhere that... the Retina display MacBook Pros are having some kind of burn-in issue?
There are two manufacturers of panels for that particular. It's a 15-inch has a problem. There's LG and Samsung. Samsung is having an odd burn-in problem. There's some other issues with it as well. The LG seems to be fine. The problem is if you have the problem and you take it into Apple, they'll fix it.
They're not interchangeable.
They are interchangeable, so interchangeable that Apple doesn't say when you're putting one on the replacement parts which one makes it. So you're just as likely to get another Samsung screen.
There's no telltale signs on the stock?
No.
Wow.
No. So people are like bringing it back 3 or 4 or 5 times till they get an LG panel.
And that's on the 15-inch.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Are they talking about making them all... Getting rid. I mean, I guess they can't ditch their inventory of replacement parts.
So I saw somebody had found a way that you could tell if you're on the command line by running against some of the internal properties of the system and looking at the product code, internal product code for the monitor, whether it's an LG or Samsung. I think it's the like somewhere in the beginning letters the LG one actually says LG. And the Samsung
says some
letters.
So you'd have to install it and then check.
Yeah. I mean, they might know if the product ID is somewhere where they can see it on the outside of the monitor or something. Just because they said that internally it provides a code that lets you know based on the ID.
The story I read said that the geniuses, not so genius, at the Apple stores cannot tell which ones they are. So there's no code apparently that they know of
externally on it.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a class action lawsuit over that.
All right, I'm still doing research on there are DVD recorders with digital tuners built in. But I don't know if that gives you a channel guide that lets you record, like, can you choose?
You would probably have to do it based on time and channel.
No, I know that's true, uh-huh. But I'm betting if I could find a DVD recorder that would let you, that had a channel guide that wasn't TiVo.
There's some sites that provide channel guides that hook into devices like that.
Yeah, they'll do like the 6-digit numbers, then it'll actually look it up. So you can, you know, like 90210 might actually record 90210 at a certain time and date.
There was
in the TV guide listings.
There was a feature on VCRs in the 90s called VCR Plus, and you would put in a code rather than try to program it, and it would do that, and it's probably
same deal. I bet it's probably the same company, maybe even. It's just trying to find life in the DVR world.
DVR Plus.
No?
All right, I'm still looking for one. I want to see because that's actually a feature I've come to love on my DVR is being able to especially when a show goes out, you know, it's like okay, we're not going to play any new shows for the summer, and then we're going to come back in the fall, or they have more than one break now. But you set up on the DVR, you say record all new episodes.
Right.
So
only new.
At some point, you go through and although I don't like the new guide because you can't set it to record every instance of a show at a specific time. Because it used to be on the old system on Comcast, you could say record this show any day at this time. Now you can either record all new ones or all of them.
Yeah, the U-verse lets you do that.
But, you know, so I'll go through my DVR and I'll say, oh, that show's Burn Notice came back on. Awesome. Let's watch some Burn Notice. But no, I need that ability. I need some kind of built-in guide to my DVD recorder, DVR.
Apparently, there is it's called XML TV. It's an XML spec for showing TV listings, and it looks like almost everyone's compliant. That's what Myth TV uses. There's a thing called Listing Grabber that uses it. So it looks like a lot of services, even some of the cable services, use this to get populate listings. So it's probably out there for free, it looks like.
But how do you connect your device to use it?
And I guess you'd have to use something that takes advantage of it, like Myth TV.
All right, 713-526-5738 if you want to be on the air with us. Groovehouse?
Yes.
Who's up?
Up next, we're going to speak with Chris.
Chris, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Hey, y'all. I have a certain setup for my cutting the cord thing that I did at my house.
Okay.
Wanted to share with y'all because I think it works great as long as you don't use as long as you're just not a TV maniac.
Okay.
But what it is, the key to it is using TeamViewer with the computer on your TV. And you use a TeamViewer through your laptop to access your computer that's hooked up to your TV. And the reason why it works so great is because, first of all, you don't need Hulu, because if you need, you know, Hulu, as everybody knows, is not the greatest thing. And so you're basically cutting that out by using the silicone dust HD home run that the other guy mentioned.
Yeah.
And you basically record your regular shows, so you don't need Hulu. And it just records off the antenna.
Yeah, but okay.
And you have Netflix.
My question on that, though, is you record off the antenna. That's what we're talking about in this conversation. Is there a way to record off the antenna and tell it, record every instance of this particular show, or do you have to set it up like an old school VCR?
It's Windows Media Center. So it says all new episodes. It says only on channel 20.
Yeah, Windows Media Center comes with that.
On any channel at any time. And it'll only keep 3 episodes, or it'll keep 10 episodes, it'll keep infinity episodes. So basically you buy a terabyte and you cut, you know, 8 Hulu out of the picture.
So you record broadcast
television. You have all your shows archived yourself.
What do you use?
So it works great in that manner, right?
What do you
use? And then you have your Netflix.
Can I interrupt? Can I interrupt? Chris, can I interrupt?
You have your...
Hang on. All right. If you're not going to let me get a word in edgewise, we're just not going to talk to you. What I was looking for is I was looking to have a little back and forth where I could ask you a question and ask you for some specifics on this, but no worries.
Could not pause his DVR.
It cannot. I mean, if the pause button doesn't work. So, Dwight, Windows Media Player or Windows Media Center, does it allow you to bring in? Do you have to have a TV tuner of some kind of device, and it will give you the ability to record to your hard drive?
Yes. Yes.
And broadcast television has no problem with that. There's no weird encoding or anything like that.
Not that I know of. I mean, that's an interesting solution. That's still a box you have to buy.
Can you do it? Is there any option to add a tuner capability to an Xbox?
Yeah, I think there is.
Because I've got...
And actually, Microsoft has been working deals with a lot of content providers and with a lot of broadcasters, and they may actually like have a deal with CBS, so that might take care of the CBS.
I wonder if I could use my Xbox to record broadcast television. I'm gonna have to Google that. All right, Groovehouse.
Yes.
Who's up next?
All right, up next on the show, we are gonna speak with Gary.
Gary, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Hello. I have a question. I heard a story on NPR today about an anti-spam company, and they had blacklisted another group that was opening up their servers to all kinds of, unpleasant material. And they blacklisted them, and then they turned around and initiated a nationwide general internet attack. I mean, not like where you go into one company and you overload their servers, but they say it's affecting millions of computers around the country.
A little exaggerated.
Very exaggerated. There's a story at Gizmodo that basically debunks that. There was the company that there actually was a kind of a flame
battle, a flare up
between Spam House, which is known for blocking spam sites, and
Cyberbunker,
which
yeah,
right, which hosts a lot of nasty ones, and there was a DDoS attack, but it did not take down the internet. It did not slow everyone else down. There's a host of sites online that monitor the health of the internet, and they were all copacetic today. They were all greenlit, and a lot of internet experts, upon seeing some of these stories, said that's not true. And indeed, most people weren't having any problems at all. So check at Gizmodo, and you'll get the real scoop.
All right, good deal. Thanks.
Uh-huh. All right, appreciate your call. All right, 713-526-5738, 713-526-KPFT. Groovehouse?
Yes.
Whoa.
Yes, I'm sorry. I was...
Yeah!
I was on the phone. And
all right.
He brought up the mics a little bit late, and then you said, I said, yes, and then I didn't...
All right, Groovehouse, can I get a word in edgewise here?
Do I think? Hang up, Jay.
Go ahead and just hang up on him.
Go ahead and just boot him out of the studio.
Oh, man. There needs to be a video component to this show. It really does. There's so many hand gestures and facial expressions. You're missing out on a very rich experience.
Very rich.
Groovehouse.
Yes.
He's there. Yes.
Yes, I'm here.
What do you want?
I'm working.
What?
It's
not like, what do you want?
What do you want?
It's not what I meant.
That's what it's. Yes.
Yes.
Are you going to get up and go to school?
Yes. Is there any Mountain Dew left?
I guess
I'm in.
Am I getting drunk?
Oh, Dungeons and Dragons. All right, Groovehouse.
Yes.
All right, this joke's losing its appeal. Yeah, it Who's up next by length of the holding?
By length of the holding, it's going to be Joe.
Joe! Joe, you're on the air. You scared it. Hey, Joe, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Hey, guys. Number one, I got to thank you for the awesome amount of intelligence you guys share every week. Quick shout out to... Everybody owes their membership dues. If they only listen to Technology Bites, it's worth the membership to this station because you guys rock.
All right, thanks.
And my personal question is on tablets. I'm about to buy a tablet, and I'm wondering about the favorites or advice. I'd like to get the smaller, the 7-inch sort of level, but I am not a gamer. I don't care about your movie. I need it for business.
Are you editing yourself?
I want to run basically, email and a calendar application, but maybe something like Microsoft Office, Excel spreadsheets, and Word. And I'm wondering if you guys have advice. Your favorite low-end or inexpensive tablet in the range.
Hey, Joe. Are you censoring yourself? I keep hearing beep, beep. Are you
touch tone?
I think you're cheek dialing.
I'm cheek dialing.
My phone and my connection sucks, and I can barely hear you guys. So you're
cheek dialing.
I don't know what's going on there.
All right. For what you describe, it sounds like you're.
I'm looking for a business side of the tablet world.
Probably a
favorite tablet.
Probably a Windows 8 tablet for you. Probably a Windows 8 tablet so you can run Windows applications like Excel and so forth.
And if you're interested, in a
Bluetooth headset,
yes, you ought to get one of those for sure. If you're interested in a low cost one, probably the Surface RT is a good choice. Hello?
I'm sorry, hard to hear you. Did you say the Surface RT?
The Surface RT, the Windows Surface RT computer?
It's about $500. It's about $500. And it has a one downside to it is you can't install new traditional Windows applications on it. You can only install Windows 8 applications on it, but it comes with Office. It comes with Office, so it has what you need already.
What I'm wondering about is, you know, I'm trying to avoid all the weight and the size of just buying a small notebook computer. Is it going to save me any money from just buying a damn another notebook?
Not really.
Yeah, a notebook computer, you could get a low-end notebook computer for about the same cost. It's decent. This is much lighter, much thinner. The cover serves as a keyboard. You open it up, and you can use the inside of the cover as a keyboard.
Okay, so that's a bonus.
Go to the Microsoft store. They have them there. You can lay hands on them, the Microsoft store and the Galleria.
Good idea. Okay, cool. Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Thanks for your call. Bye.
Righto.
All right. So the Xbox, I'm not seeing anything that lets you turn the Xbox into...
It does not get live TV unless you subscribe to their... There's a Fios service, but we don't have Fios here in town, I think.
That would just get us right back to...
Right, back to being
back to
tied to the cable.
Yeah.
There's no live TV on the Xbox.
There's no ability to add a tuner to it.
Not that I'm aware.
Because you could add it.
I would have done it. I probably would have done it. Because I cut the cable too.
Yeah.
And
no, I hear you. I was just thinking that if there was some way, you know, Windows Media Center has. I do have a Windows Vista computer with Windows Media Center on it, but I don't have a lot of hard drive space on that. What have you
I was going to say, I didn't even know this before. The follow-up Xbox that's supposed to launch.
720?
Yeah, it's saying that it's going to have the ability to record broadcast TV. Of course, I mean, it's so early, you never know, but that's one of the big rumors.
Yeah, I was looking at that. 720 may feature Kinect 2 and Blu-ray.
And induction charging.
Yeah, but, you know, then again, am I saving money if I go out and buy a brand-new Xbox 720? I should probably buy a can you get Windows 8? Does it have Media Center built into it?
There's a Media Center add-on that you can get for it. Media Center doesn't come with it.
Not even in, like, I know Windows Media Center comes OEM on some, you can't buy it for Windows 7, can you? Or is it part of
Windows? It's part of Windows 7. It comes with Windows 7. But for Windows 8, it's like a separate add-on pack.
Is it? Cost?
I think initially they were giving it away, but I think at some point it will cost. And I'm not sure that I'm right on that, but that's what I seem to recall.
Because with HDLNA, or DLNA, I wouldn't have to have the computer right next to the TV to be able to get the streaming content to it. So all I need is a Windows computer with Windows Media Player set up and a lot of hard drive space with a tuner built in, and I could record broadcast television.
But you could also use Myth TV. There's a lot of people that do that.
What is Myth TV?
It's an open source DVR.
Yeah, that's the one that, like, you know, scrapes all the listings, and they're the ones that kind of built a lot of that stuff. So a lot of the ecosystem has popped up.
A lot of people
that.
Run those.
Can you? I mean, it's hardware.
No, it's a software package you can install on just about anything. You know, like really old, slow computers. Actually, I want to say, like, a number of geek gatherings ago, someone brought out a Myth TV.
Yes,
someone
that's
brought
right.
out, yeah, it also comes with, like, for instance, one of the things you can click a couple buttons and suddenly you've got a MAME console where you can play all the games that you want to and watch videos and do this and YouTube. It does pretty much everything.
Does it communicate to a DLNA?
I would guess, but I don't know. HDLNA...
You know, induction charging would be pretty cool for the controllers.
That actually would be cool.
Set the controllers on top of the device.
Down, yeah.
They have some Xbox controllers. Yeah. They have some kind of rechargeable batteries that they use.
But if you could just, like, set them down on top of the Xbox and then they would charge.
That'd be cool.
So DLNA is not synonymous with universal plug and play, is it? UPnP.
I don't think so.
Okay. No.
I don't think so.
So, Curious on IRC says, let me tell you about my Myth TV rig. It has two USB TV tuners that work with Linux and record OTA to a 500 gig USB hard drive. Channel listings come from the stations themselves. EIT guide is a laptop so I can take my shows and my portable drive on the road. That's pretty cool.
It will support DLNA, it looks like. You just have to make sure it's on the net. On the network.
Yeah, that would be the important thing. So, then I could have like some box that I've allocated for this purpose, but then I can stream it to my TV That would be cool.
Yeah, I mean, they make, like, really small footprint, you know, like, single chip-on-computer, what is it called, like, single chip-on-board computers that have all the connections, everything, and they're, like, under $100. I mean, you don't need a lot of horsepower to be able to stream video and convert stuff. So, I mean, you know, the Raspberry Pi is one example, but I don't think that's quite powerful enough to do Myth TV, but you can get something like an ALX box for $40 or $50, and it'll do it.
Maybe a Raspberry Pi squared.
What? Yeah. And then what, hooked up to a USB hard drive for storage? Or
yeah,
what?
Yeah. Or a lot of them have CF cards built in, or, you know, micro SD. But you throw a couple, you know, big size card in there, and then you're good to go.
I guess.
You know,
yeah.
64 gigs. It's, you know, enough.
Yeah. All right. Well, I got some stuff to think about there. All right.
We'll try and bring one out to the Geek Gathering. I really want to bring the Raspberry Pi smart top out to the next Geek Gathering, maybe even with the TV. So we'll see.
When is the Geek Gathering?
A week from Friday, so we've got some time to build it.
It's the first Friday of every month.
Yeah, ask Dwight. He knows.
I was thinking it might be this weekend.
No.
I mean, this
is
Friday.
Is that the first Friday of the month?
I don't know.
Oh, you should
use Well, like, considering Sunday is April 1st, April Fool's Jesus.
Zombie Jesus.
So Miriam, one of the friends of the shows, she's her baby's due any time now, and he could actually her baby could come on April Fool's Day, which is also Easter, an April Fool's Easter baby.
It's like a leap Easter, a leap
leapster,
a leap something.
I don't know what a leap Easter is.
A leap year baby thing. Easter and April Fool's fall on the same
That's like
day.
A...
It's like a leap something or another, because that won't happen again for a while probably.
It's more of a convergence or an alignment. But it's not a leap.
It's a holiday alignment.
It's a holiday convergence alignment or something. I don't know. Anyway, who's up next?
All right, up next on the show, we are going to speak with Motorcycle Ken.
Motorcycle Ken.
Hello.
Hello.
How you doing, guys?
Good.
I'm pretty much a backwoods type of guy, motorcycle mechanic, et cetera, et cetera. Let me tell you about the story I pulled on my dad. This is back when the big dupe, George Bush Sr., was interacted us with Iraq and stuff in the war.
Interacted us, yeah?
Yeah, and we were doing a little remodeling in the house, and I was stuck on a ladder, and I left my power tool, which was cordless. I mean, not cordless. It had a cord, but it was too short. And I said, Dad, he just walked in the door, right? I said, Dad, would you hand me that cordless extension cord? So he went looking for it. And he goes, what color is it? I said, it's clear. It's cordless. Extension cord. My mom was laughing her butt off. But now that guy was talking about induction.
Sounds like a hee-haw mowing.
Yeah. little Dupia doesn't even get to claim that one. But my mom started laughing. And she felt sorry for him. And she goes, Ken, just put him out of his misery. I said, Dad, just give me that orange one. So now, wouldn't that be nice to have a cordless extension cord for all of our wiring needs? Wouldn't that be just, if we can think it could happen.
Well, unless you're Tesla going up against...
If we can bring Tesla back from the dead,
yeah,
might be able to make it happen.
But somebody said that if you can think it, if you can imagine it, it could probably happen. And that's when the induction conversation came up about two or three callers before, and that just gave me another brilliant idea. Anyway, I just wanted to leave you on that note.
All right, well, I appreciate it.
And I'm a computer illiterate, but I sure am learning a lot from you.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Make sure and plug it in to the wireless extension cord or something. Yeah. Interesting batch of calls tonight.
As in, may you live in interesting times?
As in the Chinese curse, interesting, yes.
They've been fun.
Some have been real fun. Chris, boy, he just wouldn't let me get a word in edgewise. But I'm really fascinated by this whole thing. Says, now it's like not only the idea of cutting the cord like Dwight's talking about, but deploying and utilizing some of the cooler technology that I have, you know, with the DLNA that has some appeal. So if I could record broadcast television, because that's the bulk of it, I still would be without my BBC America, so I wouldn't be getting my Top Gears.
Y'all didn't mention
But look
Joe.
And see if you can buy it on, because it airs there, the full season's there, so you may be able to buy them.
The timing of cutting the cord with the new deployment of the anti-piracy stuff on Comcast is bad timing.
Anti-piracy stuff on Comcast? Five shows. What are they doing?
That's all.
The stuff where they monitor if you're pulling down content, if you're pulling down...
Six strikes?
Oh, right.
The six strikes, yeah.
Oh, well, you don't want to do
that. Not
that
I
anyway.
Ever did that. No, but if you're cutting the cord every once in a while, you know, there's going to be something you want.
SSL.
SSL?
Mm-hmm. Tor.
Right. So cutting the cord just, you know, leads to all kinds of interesting possibilities.
Just, you know, use SSL and give yourself 2 to 3 times as long for it to download.
Okay.
Yeah, I was going to say, you know, earlier when y'all were mentioning all the interesting calls, you did mention Joe. Joe's call.
Which one was Joe's call?
Joe, that was the beeping interesting call.
The self-censorer. Yeah, that was interesting and irritating. All right. Speaking of irritating, who's up next, Groovehouse?
Up next, we're going to speak with Jim.
Jim, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Hey, how you guys doing?
Good. How are you?
Not too bad. Hey, Sunday I had finally decided to buy a tablet, went out, bought the new iPhone 4 with 128 storage. I have PCs and I have Android devices, and I'm a little baffled by the iPad. I'm having trouble, I realize today. I think that there's no real way to do USB connectivity with this device.
Well, you can connect it to a USB charger.
Yeah, I got that part down, except it doesn't seem to want to charge off my PC unless I hook it up to its own USB charger.
The PC, most PCs, unless they're very new Apple ones, don't have the power to charge it. It requires a much more powerful
charger.
Yeah,
not enough current.
Right. Now, there are some USB devices that will connect up to an iPhone or an iPad, specifically the iPad. There's an adapter, but it has...
It doesn't... it won't do files. It'll only do photos,
no, you
videos.
No, you can't plug in a USB flash drive and read files off of it, no.
Okay, so the other alternative to that I saw was a Wi-Fi USB hotspot, which is basically allows you to run, say, 4 USB devices. It converts it to Wi-Fi, and then you can use it into your... They advertised that it would work just fine with your iPad. Are you familiar with that?
You're talking about some kind of file, like a USB file server where you plug the USB device in and they're accessible wirelessly by other devices on the network?
Yep.
I don't know what
specifically says for iPads and iPhones.
What kind of files are you wanting to get over?
Just the problem is I'm running into situations where I am at work, I'm an AV engineer, and we have people handing us USB sticks all day long with changes in their presentation, changes in this, changes in that. And there's no way to, like, pump it up through iCloud and bring it back down. And a lot of these rooms have restricted internet access anyway.
Dropbox.
So it's local files.
Dropbox.
Dropbox?
Dropbox. Like some kind of online service where you can take the files, drop them in the Dropbox. There's a Dropbox app for the iPad.
Yeah, I'm familiar with it. We won't be allowed to use that. We're dealing with clients that they have... private network set up just to communicate with themselves. They won't let us on that. They, you know, when we need to make a change in something we're doing for them, it's got to be right there physically, locally.
Sounds like the iPad may not be the best solution for
this. Yeah, I'm beginning to think that's the case.
I mean, something like a Windows 8 tablet would give you the functionality.
Sorry, I'm not a Windows fan any longer. I've used them for too many years.
Well, you want something that's going to be able to do the job you're trying to do, and it sounds like you don't have the right tool to do that. So whether or not you like Windows and whether or not it's the actual right solution for what you're trying to do, those are two different things right there. But
yeah, of course.
I don't know about the file server situation where the USB, you know, I've never used an iPad to access a network share. Now, if this server has some kind of web interface, it's possible. What are you saying, Barry?
I was going to say,
basically, it's not a net
it can be used on a network, but it is basically a Wi-Fi hotspot that will transmit to up to 8 devices at one time, and you can plug either a USB 500 gig or 1 terabyte drive into it, or your little, you know, SanDisk thumb drive.
Right, but how does the iPad itself access that device to get the file?
By Wi-Fi.
No, not by what protocol?
I'm not really sure.
Is it HTTP? I mean, is it going to give you, like, is it going to be like browsing a web server and you can see the files, a list of files?
Do you have the name of this product?
Or hold on a minute. Let me jump out to, where was that? It's in Chrome.
What did you find, Barrett, while you're looking?
Well, I was going to say, there's probably, it looks like there are a couple of FTP clients for iPad, or there are a few different ways to put it around. But if you want to be able to read a USB thumb drive from iPad, there is a couple of like pretty easy hacks to do it. You just have to get a camera connection kit for the
iPad. I have the camera connection kit. I did the little 4-port non-powered version I saw on YouTube. Doesn't work. I did it with a powered version. Doesn't work. Doesn't recognize it.
Have you tried different flash drives?
KD5 says tell him.
No, I haven't done that. I've actually tried a hard drive, larger hard drive, and then a SanDisk drive, but I haven't gone over to the other, tried different drive.
KD5 on IRC says use Raspberry Pi as a Wi-Fi hotspot and use the GoodReader app on the iPad.
Five. And the GoodReader app?
Yeah, if you talk about a Raspberry Pi, that could get...
Although it'll take pretty much any USB stick you can put in there. Because that's the danger. Even if you could find, a USB stick that the camera adapter may work with, you might have some sales guy wandering into the conference room with some brand you've never seen before and it wouldn't work. So reliability, yeah. Raspberry Pi is $35. You can get them all over, online, right. And that may work.
Well, I'll give that a try.
What was the device that you came up with for the USB
Wi-Fi? I'm trying to find it real quick here, and I can't find it in my favorites because I don't know how to use the Chrome
If it's being advertised as a way to access thumb drives wirelessly from a device like an iPad, then I would suspect it does that if it's being advertised as such. But I'm not familiar with the device you're talking about.
Right on. Well, all I can do is experiment around and see if it, because that's really my only holdup. I love the machine otherwise. It does, most of the stuff I can do with applications I can find, especially like audio analysis and things like that. And I do always have a PC in the background and we have some iMacs and also a variety of other ones. But for using when we need to run large applications to run like JBL sound systems and stuff like that. So, but this is just, I need to get light sometimes, and I needed something that'll do most of my stuff and import a lot of, like my billing files, for example, so I can charge these people.
All right.
So.
All right. Well, thanks for your call.
All right. I appreciate it, guys. I'll give it a try.
All right. Good luck. Thanks. All right. Back to Myth TV. Can Myth TV run on Apple? If I want
an Apple, now that if it's a current Apple machine with Intel hardware, I would guess so. Yeah. Yeah. Back in with PowerPC, probably not, but I bet it would now.
It's got its own operating system. It's a combined operating system. And
yeah. It's a Linux based operating system that runs pretty lightweight.
You run it as boot camp, probably.
No, it's own operating system and application. So it's designed to boot the computer with that system.
Yeah, it looks like you can run. Actually, it'll run on top of OS X.
Okay, so I was just wondering if I could set up Myth TV, and I don't want to try to go get hardware and stuff and build it from scratch. But if I can see it in action and run it on my Mac, and get a tuner, I should be able to get a tuner for my Mac.
Yeah. So here's the deal: because Myth TV, it's a package that runs on Linux, so you can get a lot of distributions. So Myth TV kind of comes as a distribution, but because you've got Mac ports. Which lets you run Linux software on OS X.
Yeah.
It looks like you can just download from the mythtv.org site, you can download one that will run on OS X. You don't have to like wipe out the operating system. You just run it on top of that and you're
in good shape as an app,
yeah.
And then get a USB TV HD tuner or whatever for the Mac to get the broadcast channels or get the broadcast. I should be able to then record that and then set up the Plex server on there to stream that. Well, if that thing actually has its own DLNA server, I'll be curious. I'll have to play with it. I'm very fascinated now. You're caught up.
Nice. Yeah, yeah. You just need MySQL for the back end, the front end, normal
app.
Does
that be your SQL, or can I get Groovehouse's SQL?
Someone's SQL.
Someone's SQL.
Just no Microsoft SQL.
All right. 713-526-5738 if you want to be on the air. We got about 15 minutes left of Technology Bites here this evening, and we'd be happy to talk to you. We got a couple of calls in the queue, but we do have open lines. Groovehouse, oh, we've only got one call in the queue now. Groovehouse, who's up?
Up next, we're going to speak with Arvin.
Arvin, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Hello. My question has to do with a brand new iPad Mini. In fact, this is the third iPad Mini that they've given me. It's running on Verizon, and I'm out 60 miles from where you all are in Montrose, out 59, and it doesn't work very well, but I have another iPad 2 and a Wi-Fi hotspot Verizon, and it works fine. Any history on the brand new iPad Minis?
None of us have one.
No.
So you're having trouble getting on. What is the problem?
Verizon.
Well, no real performance on the iPad Mini. You can drive. There's a cell tower about a mile away. You can go drive and park in the driveway of the cell tower. Facility, and you can get pretty good connectivity, but if you sit in the same room a mile away from the cell tower, the iPad 2 works fine. A Verizon USB
Wi-Fi card or air card works okay.
Yeah, works fine, but the iPad Mini won't drop back and forth between LTE and 3G. You sort of have to turn off LTE, so there is no LTE at this site apparently, because
That may be part. The other thing is that the iPad Mini, because it's smaller, is by definition going to have a smaller antenna footprint.
Antenna, yeah, I thought about that.
And so that may also be the issue. But does an iPhone? Have you tried to see if an iPhone will make a connection with
it? Well, no, I have a AT&T iPhone, and it works fine at that position. But I don't think that tower. Well, I mean, I have a question. Do some cell towers have multiple carriers on the same cell tower?
Yes.
They do. So yes. The AT&T iPhone works fine.
Yeah, it's possible that it's a function of the Mini size. It also could be that the Mini, you mentioned that you it won't drop back to 3G. It could be that its 3G support is weak.
Well, the 3G, when you force it to drop back to 3G, it does work.
At the distance, at the mile away?
At the mile away, just barely. I mean, with a mile away, we get two or three bars in the parking lot of the cell tower fence. This is out in the country, so there's only one cell tower
right
anywhere around, and it's up to five bars.
I'm not familiar with the range on a cell tower.
Yeah.
It's possible that if you have one lonely cell, have you tried going towards another tower that you know exists, or
the transactions around this iPad Mini here in Sugar Land, and it's had some problems. That's why we're on the third iPad. I mean, they keep trying to get you another iPad, and so this is the third one, and they're getting tired of doing that.
Have you checked the Apple support forums?
No, I haven't. But this doesn't actually belong to me, so it's a friend of mine. And she's gone to Apple stores, the Verizon stores, and spent days on the phone. And
well, what you may find if you look in the forums, you may find other people who've dealt with it and possibly have come up with a solution.
Yeah.
And you may also see if Apple has acknowledged it as a problem. It may be the kind of thing that'll be fixed soon in an upgrade.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks a lot. Uh-huh.
Yeah. Right. Thanks for your call.
Yeah.
Yeah. The Apple support forums are a great source of information for that kind. Often you'll see problems arise there before they show up in the tech press or even before the geniuses know about them.
It could just be that he's holding it wrong.
The death grip.
All right, 713-526-5738. If you want to be on the air with Technology Bites, 713-526-KPFT. One call in the queue. Reasonable amount of time left in the show if you want to talk to us. I want to go home and install Myth TV on my Mac. But now I got to figure out which tuner card to get, because it won't do me any good if I'm not able to get any.
I see I've created a monster.
Well, it has captured my imagination, because I will confess that the logic is that I've been thinking, not that I am paying too much for TV. I'm paying too much for TV and for internet as it stands.
Don't we all?
But it was all reasonable until I added the iPhone and the iPad to have data. Now my cell bill is out of control. If I could cut cost in another area, then I could kind of justify having my cell phone. And I'm still also looking at converting my home alarm system. They have ADT has a service where you no longer need a landline.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right.
You use a cell phone.
Right.
So then I can cut my landline.
Right.
And I cut my landline, and I'll have the home number ported to a cell phone, which I'll give to Cynthia. So it'd be her first actual full-time cell phone, but she'll have the home number, which we have a lot of things tied to, and get rid of the landline. That would be awesome.
Yeah, we're thinking about the same thing.
You could also flip it to Google Voice, and then it could ring both of y'all's cell phones. Or
how do you flip
one
it
or the
to,
other?
How do you flip it to Google Voice?
You could port it. You could port it over to Google Voice.
You could port your home number
yes.
to Google Voice.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yep. You're kidding.
It's no. pretty cool in that you have visual voicemail. You can actually route calls depending on time of
depending
day
on
and who's calling. You can have
day.
Custom voicemail messages for different people. It's pretty nice.
So you could have your home phone number ported to Google Voice
yes.
for
yep.
free.
Yes.
Yep.
It just becomes your
Google
Voice
number.
Number.
Right.
So much has changed in the 2 weeks since you've been gone.
Wow, it's so great to be back in the first world.
If only there were a show you could listen to that talked about this kind of, you know, technology.
I did not know you could do that. That way I could get Cynthia her own cell phone with her own number, and then we'd have the home number. I could do whatever I wanted to with it. Make that
yep.
my Google Voice. Because what I like to do is I take my cell phone, and before I travel, I forward it to my Google Voice number. So that way all my... You know, if the alarm company needs to tell me that somebody's breaking into my house while I'm on vacation, at least I get an email.
The nice thing is, too, I don't know if it would work from an iPad because I don't have one, but like when I'm on my MacBook Air, if I'm in Gmail, I can place calls from my Google Voice account using the built-in mic and speaker in here. So it's like I don't even need my cell phone. If I lose my cell phone, I can still make calls from that number.
Yeah, so
but you had to pay for that, right?
No, it's free.
I did that to make and receive calls when I was in Russia to people here in the U.S. for free.
For free.
As long as you have an internet connection.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't have an internet connection, there's still kind of some apps you can use on the iPhone to actually go over 3G and make free calls.
Well, I could with my phone, I could always use a hotspot and tether my MacBook to that. I know, wow. Technology. Wow. This is cool. I'm gonna have a home media Raspberry Pi.
I'm changing the name of this show.
To Myth TV.
It's not Technology Bites anymore.
Technology's
Technology
awesome.
Rocks.
Myth Biters.
I'm not going to bite that.
That's a myth. All right, Groomhouse.
Yes.
Sorry.
It's all right. What?
You're being much more mellow now.
I did not bite that myth.
I did not. I just want to be on the record. I did not bite that myth. Groomhouse?
Yeah.
Who's up by length of holding for Technology Bites?
That's going to be Joe.
I didn't realize I could do a build. That's from watching all that Justified. Groomhouse, who is it?
It's Joe.
Joe. Hi, Joe.
Hi, guys. You were talking about not being able to run a SQL Server on a Mac. But,
we weren't saying not.
We're not saying you could.
We were making fun of running Microsoft SQL Server on OS X hardware, Linux hardware, even saying it probably wouldn't go.
No, okay.
Just because the open source thing.
Okay.
You can run. There are a lot of SQL Servers, but I don't think you can get MS SQL Server to run on OS X natively without using, you know, a VM or something. I don't think they've ported that
to Mac. You have to use Parallels 8, and I've got R2, 2008 R2 running on there fine. Couldn't get the setup to run for SQL Server 12, but I didn't care because all we run at work is R2 anyhow. Oh, and by the way, thank you for the thing last week about the 101.ru. Very nice day.
Excellent.
What was that? I wasn't here last week.
I like listening to a lot of Russian music, and I keep on bitching in iTunes because they had a new album out for Vintage that was
2003. I bought the first set of tracks on March 8th, bought the last set of tracks on March 16th, and I found out that last night they pulled the album off of the U.S. store.
Oh. Yeah, last week, what could have been like a very esoteric, very out there call, Flicky was like, I know that.
Wow. Awesome.
But no, I mean, but yeah, if you get Parallels, fortunately, I was able to get the student edition.
Oh, for Parallels? Yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, that works out nice. Well, I've got a quad core, but, you know, it still works out nice. It doesn't take that much juice, I was surprised.
Why would you want to run, I mean, just, I'm not poking fun, but why would you want to run Microsoft SQL Server, which is usually like an enterprise dedicated hardware kind of server in a VM on OS X? I mean, it's just for doing development work?
Let's put it this way. I work for a school district. I specialize in tuning. And every once in a while, I like a challenge. Okay, so I'm getting tired of Windows machines needing, let's see, I think when I put on the VM, I had to do 98 updates and then a couple other reboots afterwards. So it was just like, I've got like a SQL Server client on my iPad. And once I do a VPN into our network, It was kind of clunky, but I could run execute stored procedures that were, you know, pulling out execute. I do a lot of stuff where I'm looking at execution stats for stored procedures so that, in other words, a tune for me might be getting something running 10 to 20 milliseconds faster, but we support 200,000 students. So multiply that by, you know, a couple thousand students an hour, you know, it's real savings. So I just like those. So in other words, now I can play with connecting my Mac to my to a SQL Server and then connecting my iPad to my SQL Server running on my Mac. And it's kind of like...
Cool.
Oh, I lost him.
No,
we're here. We're here.
All right.
Yeah, but yeah. So it's just you do that, and it's kind of like what keeps me alive in terms of that, and listening to you know Russian music. If I only get 5 hours of sleep, you know, if you listen to that for about, you know, an hour on the drive, then you're pumped when you hit the work.
Cool.
All right. Thanks, guys. I appreciate it.
No problem. Bye-bye. Thanks for your call.
All right, Russian rock and Microsoft SQL Server optimization. That's awesome.
Actually, I was thinking about this, and I thought about it too late. But you know, when you're traveling in Europe and you go to the large museums and stuff, they have guides to all the museums in all the different languages. So you get one. There's one for French. They have them in Russian. So I could have picked up. I don't know if you would have been interested or not, but I thought of you. I thought I should be grabbing all the Russian guides to these different museums. So that Flicky can know his artists in Russian. But then I thought, well, that's just a big hassle bringing all this.
He can just look them up online.
Yeah. All right. Groovehouse?
Yes.
It looks like we have a call in the queue.
Yes, we do.
713-526-5738. While we're taking this call, if you wanted to call in, we still have a little time left.
Like
713.
5 minutes.
Huh?
Like 5 minutes.
Like five? Well, not that much, huh?
Not that much.
So you're really trying to like just...
let's just take this call and see what happens.
Groovehouse has been... he's been biting the myth. All right. Gorilla's in the myth.
What?
All right, then give us the call. Who is it? What do they want?
All right, then. Up next on the show, and possibly last on the show.
Oh, possibly.
Possibly. We're not sure. Maybe. It's going to be Roy.
Roy, you're on the air with Technology Bytes.
Yeah, hey guys. Yeah, I'm trying to clone a hard drive. I have a set up, my main rig has a SSD in it right now. I was trying to go up to a bigger SSD. And so I bought this like 8-core thing at Micro Center, right? And I was trying to clone it over. But after I did that, Windows got really upset with me and like wouldn't update right. And so then I just put the old SSD back in, but we'd like to go up to a bigger size drive. Do you know, is there anything like I'm doing wrong?
Or the, you, were the drives the same geometry? Was it like the exact same drive, or was it like a larger drive you're going to?
It was a larger drive I was going to.
And the device using, is this a black thing that you put the drives kind of naked, one on each side, and it plugs into the computer?
I had my regular OS drive in the computer. I plugged in the new drive into this like Acorn thing, and I went through its software to clone. It just says, you know, clone your old drive into a newer drive. So that's what I did. I thought I like followed all the things, but I'm not sure. Like, is there something that has to do with Windows? Like, it booted to Windows just fine, but Windows like got upset. Like, it wouldn't update or anything like that.
It could be you may need to reactivate it.
So like, what I wound up doing was, once Windows wasn't updating, I did like a Windows upgrade with my Windows disk. And what happened there was, it came up and said, you know, I was doing other things, but when I came back to it, it said, this is not a valid copy of Windows, and totally shut me out.
That's what you should do. There is when it does that, it will give you a phone number to call, an 800 number.
Okay.
And you call that number and tell them that you have moved Windows to an SSD on the same machine, and they will give you a new key. They're okay. They're very forgiving.
Okay. Even though it's an OEM Windows.
Oh, it's an OEM copy of Windows, yeah, but it's the same machine, right?
I built my own computer.
It's the same machine.
Bad idea.
Is it the same? Was it? Is it the OEM that came with this original machine?
Right. Yeah.
Then they'll still do it.
They will. Okay.
So long as you're just replacing just the hard drive and you're not doing much else beyond that, they will give you a new key.
Okay. So I call Windows when I get to that point.
Yes. Yes, it's okay. At a point they'll be, you know, if to resolve this, and they'll give you a number you can call. Call them up.
All right. Hey, thanks a lot.
All right.
Thanks. All right. Well, Groovehouse, as he mentioned, will probably tell us that we're out of time. So
I won't.
He scared all the callers away.
Flicted's going to do it. He'll be the one to tell you you're out of time.
Out of time.
Mm-hmm. Out of touch.
All right. Well, we are pretty much out of time. We don't have time to take any more calls. But we have enough time to blather on. So we have a geek gathering a week from Friday.
Not this Friday.
First Friday of the month. Every first Friday of the month. Every month since 2002.
If the first Friday falls on a Saturday, it's still the following Friday. What happened, Jay?
The first Friday falls on a Saturday every leap month. I want some of what Groovehouse has been biting. All right, well, we're going to make our way out of here. It's great to be back in the U.S. of A. defending my credit card against the heathens of Europe who try to steal my identity. So my trip had it all. So if you're following along with my trip, this last trip to Spain, if you're following along, you either got the joy of coming along on a great European vacation because of all the photos, or if you're one of those really hateful people who like Schadenfreude or whatever that word is, think, Jay got his credit card ripped off. Jay was sick. So it was best of both worlds. I was really providing for
everyone.
Or if
you just put Instagram on mute.
Was it good for
it
you?
Was pleasant.
Did you mute my Instagram? You weren't
not
even
just your Instagram.
Yeah, I had to mute everybody.
I had to mute it because I periodically get kind of annoyed with other services pumping into Twitter, and I'll just turn it off. So
all right, well, we got to get out of here. You've been listening to Technology Bites. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Barrett.
I'm Dwight.
And he's
Groovehouse.
He's getting us out of here. Hey,
gotta go.
This is it. It's the final week of KPFT's 43rd birthday online fundraiser. We've offered wonderful thank you gifts, given many reasons to support KPFT, and even given you cat memes at our Facebook page. Now our fortunes are in your hands. Our fate rests with you. I'm General Manager Dwayne Bradley, thanking everyone who's donated so far. Your contributions have helped chip away at our winter shortfall, and support from old friends and those of you who've never contributed before make make a huge difference as we inch toward our goal. Visit kpft.org now to make a first-time or renewing donation during our March online campaign. Again, that's kpft.org for you to do your part. Your well wishes and love mean a lot, but you can't pay electric bills and tower rent with hugs, though we wish we could. Visit kpft.org right now to donate to your community radio station. This is KPFT Houston. Thanks.
Even as mainstream political discourse in the U.S. focuses on the supposed need to cut back on social services for the general population, and banks in Cyprus seek to make up their losses on investment by taking depositors' money, countries in Latin America have been working to end the exploitation of the many for the profit of the few. In Venezuela, the percentage of people below the poverty line has been reduced from 52% to 32% under Hugo Chavez's leadership, and the consumption of food by the population has nearly doubled. What can we learn from the Venezuelan experience? I'm George Ryder. Join me and John Prophet on Thresholds this Thursday at 6 a.m. for a conversation about the transformations there with Greg Wilpert, author of Changing Venezuela by Taking Power, The History and Policies of the Chavez Government. We'll be talking about the successes and shortcomings of the Bolivarian Revolution so far and its prospects for the future under new leadership. It's a call-in show, and you're invited to participate. That's this Thursday, 6 a.m., here on KPFT, Houston.